Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is an
ENN
special report. Now reporting.
Peter, you look very handsome.
ENN's at 6.
When the clock struck 6, it meant one thing.
I want to go chase the squall.
Peter has nothing interesting to say.
This is Gil.
Now, from the ESPN New York news desk, here's
Rosenbaum or whatever that guy's name is.
No wonder your show is number one.
Welcome to ENN on a Tuesday evening in New York City. We'll start off by saying good evening to Michael. And then we'll say good evening to Don.
The Yankees have played 7 doubleheaders this year, Don and Peter. That's 14 games. What do you think their record is?
6-1.
Said it with such certitude.
I was right, though. I just misunderstood the question. They were 6-1. They swept 6 of the 7 doubleheaders they played.
So they were really 12-2.
I win!
But he's right. He just is wrong.
Right.
Exactly.
Wrong.
So, sad day for the Yankees. The Yankee organization mourning the passing of general partner and co-chair Henry G. Hank Steinbrenner, who passed away at his home in Clearwater, Florida from a longstanding health issue. He was 63 years old. The Steinbrenner family put out a statement saying Hank was a genuine and gentle spirit who treasured the deep relationships he formed with those closest to him. He was introduced to the Yankee organization at a very young age, and his love for sports and competition continued to burn brightly throughout his life. Hank could be direct and outspoken, but in the very same conversation show great tenderness and lightheartedness. More than anything, he set an example for all of us in how comfortably he lived, enjoying his personal passions and pursuits. We are profoundly saddened to have lost him, and will carry his memory with us always. The oldest child of George Steinbrenner is dead at 63 years old. Michael, anything you want to add? We, of course, opened the show talking about him, but anything you want to add about Hank?
Yeah, sad, because I don't think a lot of the public really got to know him. There was a short period of time where he was the out front guy, and he was very glib, very direct. You know, used to laugh off people saying that the Red Sox, you know, are the team, Red Sox Nation. He goes, you walk anywhere in the world and people are in Yankee caps. They're not wearing Red Sox caps. He also railed against the fact that, you know, what would Major League Baseball be without teams like the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Mets and the Dodgers putting their money into a pot to give to the teams that can't make the same sort of money because they're not in bigger markets. And he said, yeah, they all made money, but they didn't spend money on players. And that's not right. He said, that's not the way it should be. He was, again, in power for a short time in 2008. He advocated for the extensions of Mariano Rivera and of Jorge Posada, and also was a guy who made sure that A-Rod returned to the Yankees and signed him to that second 10-year contract. And after that, he kind of reset into the background just a little bit, and Hal Steinbrenner became more the front guy. I think for a while, Hank liked being the front guy because he was a lot like his father. He's very glib, would give a great quote, didn't mind exchanging with the media, but he also did not like being criticized. And after a while, the family just said, you know, the best way to go with this is let Hank be in the background with his baseball acumen and let Hal be the guy up front. He's a numbers guy. He's going to run things in that way and not with emotion. And that's the way it went for the last, you know, 10 years, especially since George passed away in 2010, and Hal's done a great job, and you know, Hank has had health issues for a long time, but he leaves behind a legacy of, you know, got together a group of players playing baseball in the area called Hank's Yanks from kind of impoverished backgrounds, and 30 players that would not have had the chance went on to play professional ball from that team. And two are playing in the major leagues right now. A lot of them have gone to college that would not have gone if they didn't have his input and his support. So that's a lasting legacy for him. He was great around kids, and it's just sad that somebody has to go at that young of an age, of the age of 63. This has nothing to do with the coronavirus. He had just been suffering health-wise for a while, and his family was around him at his home when he passed away, and our condolences go out to the Steinbrenner family, and rest in peace to Hank.
Very nicely said. I actually didn't mention this story in ENN because I'm a hack, and that would be the Dak Prescott birthday party at his house, a gathering in the Dallas area that supposedly garnered the attention of the police. In attendance, his running back, Zeke Elliott, and rumors that it was more than the 10 people that the CDC recommends to ever hang out at one time.
And then the police denied it.
And then the police were not able to verify that more than 10 were there. Interesting. Stephen Jones was on the radio, 105.3 The Fan in Dallas, talking about the fact that he spoke to Dak and Zeke about the gathering.
Yes, we certainly have communicated with Dak and Zeke, and I think they're certainly aware now of how sensitive these situations are. And I don't think, you know, you'll be seeing that anymore. There's certainly guys that we have the utmost respect for, and I certainly know they understand the sensitivity of, you know, of the situation we're in today. It's certainly very serious and something that we know, you know, certainly know they understand.
Isn't that amazing? Because it seems like Stephen Jones is telling you that such a party did take place.
Yeah, that's right.
And then he talked to them. He said, it's not going to happen moving forward.
Correct.
They didn't know the reality of what's going on in the world till Stephen Jones brought it up to them. What kind of dolts are these people?
I want to see the stats here.
So they can't confirm that there were 10. Maybe there were 9.
It supposedly was 50, Don. And I don't think that any police officer in the Dallas metro area really wants to be arresting Dallas Cowboys.
No. Now, how are things in Texas compared
Dallas, to Dallas has 1,877 cases with 42 deaths. Mm-hmm. It is nothing like New York City, but it's really there. Almost 2,000 cases, third highest in the state.
So they continue to allow
second highest in
like
state.
That. You know what? It's going to be higher.
Correct. The county that has Houston in it, Harris, has the most in Texas, 37-47.
Well, I think that what plays in Texas's favor is that everything is so spread out. And I think what plays against New York is everything is so densely populated.
Obviously, that's true. But I think Houston might be like the 10th most populated city in the country. Now, I understand they probably have a lot more space. People aren't on top of each other like they are in some of the Northeast cities. But
how many people live in New York?
State or city?
City.
Like 9 million, 8 million?
And basically what? How many miles? 7?
Well, Manhattan is 13 miles, but and 2 miles across. But you know, you've got big boroughs, too. But all of the boroughs, people are living on top of each other.
That's the problem. How do you social distance when, you know, you try to leave an apartment building, right? And there might be 5 people waiting to walk out, another 5 people waiting to walk in. But still, just use your head, people. Having parties, even if it's in a place where it hasn't been hit that hard, you know what? There was a time where New York wasn't hit that hard, and then all of a sudden it was. And you hear this from De Blasio and Cuomo a lot, because New York and New Jersey have gotten a lot of help around the country, right? Oregon sent a lot of ventilators to New Jersey. And Governor Murphy said, you know, we'll be there for you when the time comes in Oregon. And it's ominous to hear it that way, but it's kind of true. It's like, all right, you're fine now, but 2 months from now, you know, we may be okay and you're going to need our help. Because that's the way this virus is working, people. So,
well, maybe that won't happen because of the mitigation in California and in New York. Maybe the spread will not reach those other places.
Well,
maybe.
Didn't reach the Prescott household, apparently.
Well, so 1.3% of the population in New York City have it. That sound right? 1.3%. Yeah. 122,000.
And the death toll in New York City really rose today because they added people that have died of what they were pretty sure was COVID-19, but that was never tested. So I think it added like 4,000 deaths.
Are you serious?
Total. So now it's up to 10,000.
And there's a back. They also warned us, Michael, that like on Mondays and Tuesdays, there's sometimes a backlog of catching up on reports from Saturday and Sunday. So sometimes the death toll is high. Not necessarily the number you got today was over the 24-hour period. There might have been some spillover from people that passed away on Saturday and Sunday. But think about the amount of people that have been infected, Peter. And we've been in lockdown for pretty much a month. You know, so it's worked, but what would be the case if we didn't lock down? If we just continued as business as usual, what would that number be?
I know.
And if that's we let what up, you gotta worry about when you want to reopen things.
I know. The NHL has extended its self-quarantine recommendation for players and staff till April 30th. This is the third time the NHL has extended the deadline. So that seems like the right decision. The NFL and their players have agreed on a voluntary off-season home workout plan, according to Dan Graziano. Under this plan, according to a league memo obtained by ESPN, all off-season work aside from mandatory June minicamp is voluntary for players, as it is in a normal year. The memo also states that no team is required to hold an off-season program in any league year, according to the collective bargaining agreement, but that if teams decide to hold off-season workout programs this year, classroom instruction and on-field activities that customarily take place at the club facility are being supplanted by online classroom instruction and virtual workouts for an indeterminate period.
Yeah, once the draft is over, I think things are going to really quiet down in the NFL as far as information is concerned. Right?
Because we should really try to lean in here and enjoy the next 2 weeks.
Right, because
it is going to get quiet after that.
Once that draft is over, you'll start to get a little information about draft pick signing. But with no mini camps and the possibility of a delay in training camps, this might be it for the NFL for a while as far as information is concerned. I hope I'm wrong.
Now, Gettleman yesterday brought up a really interesting point when he had his conference call, because all the free agent signings that the Giants had and all the teams, they essentially did not get medical clearance. So when they're finally given their physical, those contracts could then be voided. That they're not beholden to those contracts. And he said, and that's a bad thing, he said, because we're approaching our draft as if those are guys that we have.
Right.
And we approach free agency with a certain amount of money to spend. That's why GMs want everything put on hold, because everything could be thrown into flux if the players that you signed don't pass their physicals and all of a sudden they're not Giants, they're not Jets, they're not whatever team signed them. That's the one variable in this that could mess everything up, because the Giants could chase somebody completely different if one of their free agents doesn't pass the physical. So that you're going to get some of that too. And when everything opens up a little bit and some of these guys fail physicals, then you've got a real issue.
Speaking of the draft, Bill Belichick had a conference call about the draft. He was asked, though, shockingly, about Tom Brady leaving the Pats.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of water under the bridge. Like I said, we're really focused on this season and trying to look at our opportunities and make decisions and plan and prepare to, you know, be as competitive as we can be this year. So that's really where our focus is on.
We're moving on to Stidham.
In defense of Bill, you know everybody would have answered that question the same way on a conference call about the draft, because that'll be their out.
Well, Gettleman did stuff that wasn't about the conference call on the draft.
He just loves talking, Michael. He's complete opposite of Bill. But you know, but he also didn't have anything as controversial as the best quarterback in the sport deciding to leave.
Also, this is the first time that he's spoken since Brady left. He had that release where he lavished praise on him, but we still don't know, even from Tom. Right. We don't know the real reason he left.
No, but I'm just saying that conference call was for the draft. So technically, I guess he was okay to say that. This is a conference call about the draft. I'm focused on the draft right now. A lot of people would have taken that out.
It was easier in this one, I agree, Don, for sure, as opposed to other ones. He'll do the same thing down the road, but it makes sense.
Oh, yeah. I'm just at that particular moment, I'm defending him, but it'll be indefensible soon.
let's keep it with the draft.
Please.
Joe Burrow was on 104.5 ESPN Baton Rouge and talked about the challenges of being drafted number one overall.
Teams that had the worst year pick at the top, and that's why they're there. You know, whatever team I go to, it's going to be a challenge at the beginning. I'm going to have to, you know, persevere through it, and just like I've done in the past. And, you know, you might have a really good first year. You might have a really bad first year. You don't really know, especially without OTAs this year, and you're going to have less time with your team. So there's going to be ups and downs for sure. You're just going to have to battle through it.
You know what? He's right, and I think a lot of people are discounting that when it comes to a guy like Daniel Jones with a completely new staff, with a new offense. They're not going to have OTAs. It's going to be really difficult, and it's going to be specifically difficult for guys coming into the league. All of a sudden, they might be thrown into games before any kind of training camps or stuff like that. That could be, you know, an accelerated start to the season, and in the NFL, of all the leagues, you really have to get your feet wet slowly. You can't just dive in. You're going to get hurt if you just dive in.
Speaking of getting hurt, Kyle Larson, his NASCAR career is basically over. He's been fired by his racing team. He's lost his two biggest sponsors after dropping a hard R N-bomb during an iRacing virtual event. But don't worry, guys. He followed it up with an apology.
Yeah, I just want to say I'm sorry. You know, last night I made a mistake and said the word that should never, ever be said. And, you know, there's no excuse for that. You know, I wasn't raised that way. You know, it's just an awful thing to say. And I feel very sorry for my family, my friends, my partners, the NASCAR community, and especially the African American community. You know, I understand the damage is probably unrepairable, and you know, I own up to that, but I just wanted to let you all know how sorry I am, and you know, I hope everybody is staying safe during these crazy times. Thank you.
Well, he's right. He was right. The damage cannot be repaired. Now, whether it gets another chance, he's 27 years old, maybe take sensitivity courses, which I think a lot of the times eyewash, people just take them, so that could be their entree to getting back. But you almost have to deprogram people. That's not the first time he said that word.
Right.
It's a word that he uses all the time with his friends. And he got caught on a nationwide live stream like a fool. So, you know, people called up earlier, you know, is the punishment too harsh? NASCAR didn't punish him.
No.
His team did, and then his team, which runs on the largesse of advertisers, the advertisers said, we don't want to be associated with this guy, and they fired him. It wasn't NASCAR. This is a free country, and the advertisers do not want to be associated with a guy who said that word.
This is not Talladega Nights, where they can just put like a leopard on the hood and just race. Right? They need sponsors, and if no sponsor wants to touch you, then you lose your ride. Chip Ganassi cannot have a driver without a sponsor. And right now, nobody's going to want to touch him with a 10-foot pole. Now, time does heal all wounds. People do deserve second chances. But until he's able to find a sponsor that doesn't think he's damaged goods, yeah, his racing career is basically on pause for the foreseeable future. Sounded like a genuine apology. Didn't sound like it was reading a statement. I'm sure he does feel bad, but it can't go unpunished.
Such a weird...
You know what I liked about his apology, though? He didn't do the, if I offended anyone.
That is true. He avoided.
That's really an apology if I offended anyone.
No, he avoided the if I offended. He knew it was just outright wrong. But that's the part that's frustrating to me is that, and I'm not, listen, none of us are perfect. We probably all say jokes here or there that we go, you know what, maybe I shouldn't have said that even around my friends. Like that was just a negative thing to say. But you know, if you can speak that eloquently about how offensive it was, why were you using it so casually? Well, because he said it wasn't the first time.
Now, there's a similar word that begins with F that talks about a different type, right?
Okay.
That gets, that you know, even growing up in movies, you know, Eddie Murphy stand-ups that would get thrown out all the time, mm-hmm. right? But we have, I think it's been ingrained in our society that that's just not a word that you say. And so, you know, listen, didn't Kobe Bryant get in trouble for saying that a few years ago?
Yep.
You know, so everybody's going to make the mistakes. But the one thing I don't want to hear is, well, I just slip because it's in rap songs, or I have some African-American friends that say it to one another. Peter, how long has that not been a thing?
You I mean, know, I'm,
I mean, I'm long time, all right? I mean, this is not the first time we've talked about this on this show. And you've been on the show for going on 5 years now, okay?
You know, this comes up, it feels like, every few months. So not to mention, Don, I'm no spring chicken. I'm 40.
Right.
And it's been, and hip-hop has been part of my life since I was 10. And I don't understand why, if there are people who were able to figure it out in 1987, why wouldn't a 27-year-old who was born in 1993... why wouldn't he be able to figure it out?
Right. Now there are some words that they were acceptable. That's why I brought up the other one, is that there was a time in the 80s and 90s where that was acceptable in movies and stand up, and it was kind of just said until it wasn't allowed to be said anymore. And then you learn to not do that. That's why I don't give Larson a pass. He's 27 years old, okay? This has been a thing for a while now. Peter, if that word had slipped in 1972, all right. I guess, but you can't plead ignorance on me, man. I'm sorry. If you've lived in this society for any length of time, if you're still going to play the whole "I didn't realize" card, then that's on you.
Marcus Stroman's not going to give him a pass. Stroman responded to an article about it by saying he should never be allowed to race again in NASCAR. He said that derogatory word so nonchalantly, your apology doesn't matter. Post-career, I'll fight this man in a UFC event for charity. He needs his ass beat. Would love to hear him say that word in the octagon. So, Marcus Stroman, always quick to jump in the fray.
So I guess he doesn't believe in second chances, but
maybe over time he will.
I can understand, but that's...
But he certainly has the right... You can't say you don't have the right to feel that way.
You can't argue with him that kind of response quickly, right?
Not at all.
That's the danger of that word.
Positive story.
And all white people that use that word probably would never use that word in front of an African American. Way back before your time, Peter, there was a whole like skit in Kentucky Fried Movie about it. It wouldn't be done. It wouldn't be done. They were all brave and stuff if they're talking to their buddies, but.
All of a sudden, not so brave.
But this is going back to the 70s. There is a classic Saturday Night Live.
Eddie Murphy on the bus?
No, with Richard Pryor.
Oh, yeah, Chevy Chase.
And they're going back with the different, calling each other the different words, right? Until you got to that word.
Right. Even then, in a comedy skit, they really outline why that's different.
So every word that you can use for an African American, Chevy Chase said, and then every word you could say about a white person, Richard Pryor said, until Chevy dropped the N, and then it just, you know, and this is, Peter, what was that? That had to be like 77, 78?
Yeah, it's just the late 70s. It's a long time ago. Figure it out. Let's end on a nice story. Quinnen Williams of the Jets donated $25,000 worth of healthy meals for medical professionals dealing with COVID-19 in New Jersey. He did it along with the help of a celebrity private chef, Brianna's Nutrition Kitchen. But shout out to Quinnen Williams for helping out in his new hometown. Up here in Northern Jersey.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
That's right, man.
Don't miss Michael, Don, and Peter weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, or look for us under Listen on the ESPN app.